You are listening to WPVMLP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Partly sunny today with a slight chance of showers this afternoon, the high 77. A slight chance of showers tonight, maybe some thunderstorms toward daybreak on Saturday. We'll have lows around 57 tonight. A chance of showers and thunderstorms again on Saturday. Some of those storms could be on the strong to severe side. Wind gusts near 20 miles per hour and temperatures near 76. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. Today, my guest is the director of TEDx Asheville, Barry Barton. Barry and I have known each other for many years. I'm interviewing her today because coming up on March the 20th, 2026, is TEDx Asheville at Diana Wortham Theater. And I'm excited to talk to Barry today because I've been helping her a bit with the organization of TEDx Asheville, which is to say, I was on the committee to help choose the people who will be on the stage. There will be 12 folks there. Barry's approach to developing the show is quite comprehensive, and it's very, very collaborative. So I'm excited to have Barry tell you a bit about what she's up to, how she's working, and where she's taking it. So now we'll turn to Barry and hear what she has to say about how she's developing TEDx Asheville.
One of the things that I remember as a young girl was that I would walk home from my elementary school, Irby Jones. It was about a mile. I'd come in, you know, grab a snack with my brother. We would watch Gilligan's Island. That was my generation. And then I would go down in the basement and dance for 2 hours. I'd have the record player. I'd have these imaginary performers. And I always had the audience. And as a child, I was creating a relationship with the audience. And I think that is part of what stays so close to my all of the formulations of what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? So that they are always in the room with me, whether it's the speakers, the lineup of the speakers, how the speakers are delivering, what else we're going to put into the event, and all of the events that lead up to that main event, which are our salons. So I think that's what guides me always. And I think the ultimate goal for me is I want to create a container for attendees to find something that lights them up. And it could be not even a speaker. It could be the dance performance. It could be the electric violin that we have. It could be the hip hop dancer that we're going to have. It's going to get out there. It could be somebody that they meet in the audience or at lunchtime, or a display that we're going to have, something that lights them up, that opens something up, that creates a spark of inspiration or just a new perspective. So that's my ultimate goal of what I want for our attendees. And I think regarding the speakers, I think where I continue to be drawn and pulled is I really believe in these human beings. And I sometimes feel like I almost know, I don't know the details of their topic, but I feel like sometimes I know more about I'm having a hard time finding the right words. I know more about the magnificence of their talk, that I don't know if they can, maybe they get it, but they don't totally get it. And I do. I see something in them. I see something in them. And I hear and I know something that lives inside of their idea. And I just, my work is to constantly, we're going to go digging deeper. We're going to go a little deeper. We're going to go really find that treasure that is deep inside of that treasure chest of your idea. And it's an arduous process for them. They are challenged. They start doubting themselves because they're getting pushed and asked questions. But the beautiful thing is that when they come out the other side and their talk is, my goal is to get them to develop a talk that's, of course, compelling, but distilled down to where it's like just this essential essence of their idea. It's crisp. It's clean. There's space in it. That they know what they're talking about and that they can fully own it because they've gone through this tearing it apart, putting it back together. And then when they get up on that red rug, they truly, truly can shine. And that is for me, it's a goal. I mean, it's a love. It truly is something I love to witness happen.
You use the word magnificent. I like that word. Mm-hmm. It's fortunately not overused, so we can still play with it.
Yes.
When I think of the sunrise, just before dawn, that little glow on the horizon.
Yeah, saw one this morning.
That is what I visualized when you said, I can see their magnificence. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they can see it or not. So I had this image of the speaker showing you the pre-dawn hint of light that's getting ready to come, followed by the sun fully coming up and rising and then feeding the earth all of its light. And I just love that. So here's what I'll bet some people that are listening to this are thinking right now, especially those out there in the world thinking, gee, I would love to do a TED Talk. I talk to a lot of people. They say, I have a good idea. I'd like to do a TED Talk. How do you do it? They say, could you give the folks listening an idea of the demand that you ask or the demands that you put on these speakers? How do you break that down? It's not just, oh, I have a speech, I'll go out and give it one day with no support. And I'd like for you to do that from the teacher point of view. And you have your business, a Stand and Deliver Asheville. You do speech and presentation work for people.
Right.
How do you get somebody from the beginning to the stage? What are some of those good breakdown things that you do that then form them into the sunrise and beyond to shining in the sky?
So I think one approach that I constantly refer to is that the speaker is a steward of the audience. Here we go back to the audience piece. They are stewarding the audience from the beginning to the end. And for the audience, it can be a transformational journey. They come in, they sit down, they have this idea or assumption or belief around whatever it is this person's going to talk about. And if the speaker guides them, is like a steward or a tour guide from beginning to end, that listener is changed by the time they end the speech. And hopefully they're moved to action as well. So it's really organizing the thoughts and the journey so that you're not changing channels all the way through and going from one thing to something different to something different. There's a through line that there's a thread that kind of holds the whole thing together. Not that you can't start with a story and then pause it and go somewhere else and then come back to it. There still is the thread within that. So I think it's about creating very, very clear transitions. It's about taking what you said right before and pulling a piece of that forward into the next thing that you're going to say. That's a great system. I think also one of the things that I learned over the last couple of years is creating a, what I call a core message. And in a TED talk, I think it has these two particular components. It has action to impact. So what do you want your audience to do? And what will happen as a result of that action? And I think if a TED speaker can really get clear on that, what is the action? That's the what I want my audience to do. And what will that create if they do it for themselves, for their family, for their business, for their community, for the world? That's been a very helpful little nugget that I've attached myself to over the last 2 years. So that's basically what I call a core message.
This event that's coming up at Diana Wortham Theater on March the 20th has 12 speakers in.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how you managed to get to those 12 speakers? I already know the answer to this because I helped you do it.
Yeah.
But for those people listening, again, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who want to get on a TED stage. This TED stage that you've created is unusual because it's a collective effort on the part of everybody involved. Unlike some TEDx talks, I got my TEDx talk, I go off and rehearse it in front of my cat or my dog or a couple of friends, walk out on stage and then say it and hope for the best.
Yeah.
You've created a beautiful laboratory, a beautiful container. I know you have because I've been part of it and it's very exciting. How does it work? So explain this to people out there listening.
I so believe that when you do a community-driven event, if you're going to call it community-driven, by golly, you better make it community. So what I mean by that is I have a group of people, 14 local folks, different ages, different colors, different walks of life, different perspectives, ages, all kinds of different. It's a great cadre of just human beings. I invite them to be on what I call the selection team. So they go through reading the application and then rating them. And then the top people move on to round two. And then the same group of people, they watch their videos and they rate them. And then the top tier of those move on to round three. And then you and I and another person interview them on Zoom. And so it's multiple perspectives. It also just, again, engages a part of the community in having, a foot in the door or a card in the card game or whatever. There's some kind of saying around that. They feel a part of it. They feel like they're contributing that little piece. And that's just one of the ways in which I try to create this container of community. Then those speakers are required to attend a day-long orientation day. They get to know each other. They get to know us, the process. And you can just see within those hours of spending time with each other, they literally fall in love with each other. And they feel more invested in the whole process and they feel supported by the whole process. And then I'll share one more thing that we've included in the Asheville one, which is it's a celebration ceremony. It's basically a rite of passage called Pass the Mic. We have it 2 to 3 weeks prior to when they take the stage. It's the sponsors. It's the former TEDx speakers come. And the whole community is saying, We have your back. We believe in you. We're cheering you on. I mean, we have truly a ritual where they then receive a little microphone, a little plastic microphone from a former speaker to them. And it is a moment when they then say, okay, I am now a TEDx Asheville speaker. I have community around me cheering me on. And it's such a poignant and very, very moving evening. So those are all the containers that I try to create, places where people can participate and have an experience of TED before we have our main event. All of that's important.
I've seen this in action, and it indeed is essential. It is important. It's this foundational strength of the entire movement that you have here in Asheville. I do want to go back to a question that I have floating around in my head. You have, I think, 200 plus applications to start out with, and then you hone those down by way of all of these steps to 12 people on stage.
Yes.
200 plus to 12, that's quite a process.
Right,
Here's my question.
Sure.
You make the final choice. You're the director.
Right.
So that it's like you're the movie director. You know, I can tell you things that I think might be interesting for you. But at the end, when you say, this is where I will put the flag, then everybody says, Barry, put the flag there. I'm going to make sure that flag stays.
Right.
You have to make these choices for these people. What goes through your head when you come on somebody you think might work, but you have back and forth, I don't know, I do know, I don't know, will it work, will it won't? How do you find that spot that gives you the confidence to choose that person or not to choose the person? What's going on inside of Barry?
Sometimes there's just an immediate gut yes. And that can be through a lot of different inputs. It could be the clarity sometimes of the way that they explain their idea on the video. That can be one of the things. Sometimes it could be just the passion and the joy I see coming out of their face or their body on the video. That was in 2022, Maisha Claiborne, she had a great idea, but it was really her presence on that video that just lit me up. And I was called, again, combination of idea and her presence. So there's a lot of different touchstones that light me up, that make me feel very compelled and secure that this person has the chutzpah, the readiness, and an idea that can carry forward through the whole process. And finally, of course, that there's a good connection with the theme. We also are looking for things like, we get a lot of applications around trauma. So that is such a really it's an important topic. It's a super important topic. Deserves to be said and spoken over and over and over. And because there's so many platforms for it, we don't highlight it as much here on the TED stage. So some of those things that are already sort of in the swimming pool of our current culture that's everybody sort of swimming in, we try to find things that are maybe a little bit on the outlier world like we have upcoming, we have imaginative intelligence, right? I mean, this is somewhat of a new idea, a new term. We have this beautiful talk about the art of making friends, and she comes at it from a design perspective. So there's something really great about that as well. We have a speaker talking about the art of saying, I'm sorry. What's interesting about this year is so many of them are really about human to human connections, building relationships. And I think that is also we are in deep, deep need of that kind of connection. We really are need in of that connection. You see it happening in Missouri, right? Minneapolis. Those people just connected up and created a massive movement of support and love and compassion. So that is also kind of an undercurrent theme that's happening in the TEDx Asheville, on the TEDx Asheville stage.
And that undercurrent theme of addressing the trauma, ironically, the trauma of the world without addressing the trauma of the
world. Exactly.
Is a beautiful, beautiful thing. This is the time in our history of humanity. This is the time for the artist to step up and do something, because the stakes are quite high. We want to somehow embrace each other.
Yeah.
And that's what I see happening on the stage at TEDx.
Yeah. Asheville. I think also, you know, Asheville, Western North Carolina, we went through Hurricane Helene. I think that it still lives in all of us. And I think we all learned something from that. There is trauma within that experience. But we have a speaker is talking about it. He calls it We Are Trail Magic. And he's making this connection to this phrase that's used along the Appalachian Trail called trail magic. And he associates it with what happened after Hurricane Helene and the connection that people made. And he's encouraging people to not drop that just because there was an emergency, but how can we keep building on that? So that's there as well. We have one woman, her name is Taylor Schenk. She is actually doing an art display of photographs that she discovered along the rivers after the hurricane that had floated down. She gathered them up, cleaned them up, and has been putting them on display and on Instagram. And people are finding their photos. And some people are saying, this is the only thing I have left. She saved something of their life. So that is going to be on display in one of the theaters at the Wortham Center for the Performing Arts. Again, the theme is Embrace the Mess. And that was a beautiful, perfect visual display of someone that said, I'm going to embrace the mess. I'm going to go crawl around in the mud and pull some people's lives, photos of people's lives out and find them. So it's a very, very moving display.
Oh, that is absolutely exquisite.
Yeah.
TED Talk. That means people have to stand on stage and talk. One of the things that you've been doing for years now with Stand and Deliver Asheville, which is beyond Asheville, Stand and Deliver wherever you happen to be.
Yes.
you help people craft the talk.
Mm-hmm.
These talks are spontaneous, finally, in the end. You mm-hmm. connect emotionally. You're a big, big believer in form and craft around a made speech. I'd love for you to give some tips for out there on how you help people understand what is required to write a speech. It's not about creative writing, but you're actually crafting it, you're honing it, you're sculpting it almost, aren't you?
Yes. So I would say this. I encourage the speakers to first splat. Just splat out their ideas. I encourage them to put it on a whiteboard, put it on sticky notes, voice memo. Just get the stuff out of their brains. There's the stories, the quotes, the statistics, whatever it is that carries that idea. And then I have a model that I created called The Shape of a Speech. And it's based on deductive thinking. It's starting with a big idea and then chunking it down into the smaller pieces. So you start with the context, and then you move down to the concrete. So you're filling in the details that speak to that bigger picture of the context. And then you begin, as you move out towards the end of your speech, you move back out to a big vision. And I call it a vision with wings. So it's just this model. And again, it's not a template. It is not a follow, you know, fill in the color by number kind of system. It is an invitation of kind of where themes belong. Again, set the context. You can do that by starting with a story. The details are, what do I need to know about your topic? And very often that's where you'll find, you know, the 3 points that I want to share with you. That's the kind of the nitty gritty information. And then again, after that, it's paint a picture for your audience. What will their world look like if they adopt your idea? Moving out again to the vision with wings, which is that uplifting final two or three sentences to close a speech.
When you say vision with wings uplifting, I see the beautiful birds flying in the sky. Or we are, funny enough, it's March 20th is when this TEDx Asheville talk's going to be. And March 20th will be about the time the migrating broad-wing hawks return to soar above the ridges to raise their young and lay their, their eggs and raise their young. So we're going to be soaring with the broad-winged hawks returning to the Western North Carolina mountains. That's very powerful when you connect that with the dawn and the sun and the hawks and all uplift.
Exactly. So
speaking of the audience, there will be one at the venue.
Oh yeah.
I've been on that stage in that venue. I performed poetry in the National Poetry Slam Championships in 1990, I believe it was 1994 in Asheville. So I know that stage. It's a fantastic stage. I'd like for you to paint a picture for those people listening in Asheville, because we're airing this on WPVM-FM in Asheville and also KCEI-FM in Taos. And one of Taos's own, Allegra Houston, will be on the slam stage. Allegra moved to Asheville to participate in the requirements you have for the speakers.
Exactly.
Talk about commitment. She's doing the imaginative intelligence talk. For those of you listening in Taos, Allegra is going to be there. Tell the audience, the listeners, what to expect. Is this some little black box venue that people walk in and pay $5 and have to dust the dust off the chairs, or what do we have here? What about the sponsors? Who's supporting this? How are they supporting it? What's it going to look like? Smell, taste, feel, audience size. Tell us.
Yeah. So we normally sell out. So 480 people will likely be in attendance there. And these are folks mostly from the Western North Carolina area, some from further away. And the theater, the Wortham Center for the Performing Arts, the Diana Wortham Theater, is a magnificent, magnificent, beautiful theater and stage. I have also been on that stage as a dancer. I have stage managed that stage. I have led events on that stage other than TEDx. So for me, I walk into that theater and I truly do feel like I'm at home. It's not a grand theater. It's just truly the perfect size where there's still intimacy within those walls. So throughout the day, we have this incredible MC, Amy Clymer. She has been our MC for the last two TEDx's. She has this beautiful way of energizing the audience, of engaging the audience. There's some questions that she poses to the audience, sometimes intermittent throughout the day. We have the Stuart Owen Dance Company, local dance company, is going to do an improv. And they are improvising with a musical artist. His name is Dixon's Violin. He has played in many other TEDx's, including Burning Man. He's not from here, but he's going to be here at this time and said, hey, can I come and perform on your stage? I've got some other things in the area. So Dixon's violin and Stuart Owen are going to improvise music and movement for 6 minutes in the second half. And we just, I mean, what a great alignment with Embrace the Mess, right? Let's just see what happens here with these artists. It's going to be great. And then we have Michael Hayes, a longtime Asheville resident and contributor to Young Lives in the area. He has this amazing drum majorette company. These are elementary, middle school, high school students. They are dynamic, but this group this time is going to be his step dance group. So they're going to be performing on the stage. And I think that's, oh, and then we have Taylor's, the photograph woman who gathered the photo. She's going to do a 2 to 3 minute sort of mini documentary about her process. So all kind of goes back to what I said in the beginning is, my hope is that an audience comes in, they sit down in this incredible theater with like-minded people from different walks of life, and that something during that day will light them up, will make them feel hopeful or inspired or curious, or they'll find a friend or a colleague or someone that they want to collaborate with for some future endeavor. There's so many things available during that day that something is going to totally delight. I hope everyone in the audience, especially including Everyday Gourmet is providing a box lunch for the day. And again, a local business serving as a sponsor and offering just healthy, delicious food. And another local business called Legally Addictive is providing an incredible dessert. I just was introduced to this company. It is a cracker with chocolate on top of it. And it truly is addictive. That's why it's legally addictive. So we have a lot of local companies like that, local entrepreneurs who are supporting us with their products, their services, and their financial support. So it's truly is a community-driven event. It is volunteer, it is sponsor-driven. We don't get any funding from anyone else. It's an incredible effort on so many people's parts, and it's a great day. So if you are listening and you want to come, make sure to get your tickets soon because we're about 60 to 65% sold out already. And this tickets do go quickly.
Continuing on with the location for a moment, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Asheville, or those of you who have just moved to Asheville, or you might not come downtown, Dinah Wortham Theater, the Wortham Center, is at Pack Square, right in the middle of downtown Asheville. So when you go to the door to walk in, you step through the door and there's a bit of a courtyard and you can enter through the courtyard and then you enter into the area where the theater actually sits. But before you get into the theater, there's this nice, well carpeted long hall filled with all of these people. So not only do you get the opportunity to engage in the speakers and what they're telling you, it's a collective engagement of socialization or really socializing. People are exchanging, they're connecting, they're getting to know each other. It's a large salon vibe. Am I close? And we do get to eat a bit and we're there and it's really quite fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually extended our lunch period for more of that to happen. So lunch is now an hour and 10 minutes, where I think last time it was 45 minutes. So just really letting people just be with each other and have a chat. And of course, they will have already heard 6 of our speakers. I also want to just let people know that we have 12 speakers this year because we reduced the time of the talks. We had been holding the 18-minute time limit on talks up until this year. And now we are encouraging a 12-minute talk. Some of them, one of them, in fact, is 8 and another is 10. What Ted is discovering is people are not watching the long 18-minute ones. That doesn't seem very long, but they're encouraging us to, again, sort of distill down the idea even stronger and even tighter. So that is why we are, we can make the space available for more of our local speakers. So 12 minutes is pretty much the top limit of our talks.
So let's go back for a moment to our 12 speakers. How do you work with folks regarding their super objective around the talk that each person plans to do? I know that when I was in New York City and was part of the TEDx New York Salon series, we held a salon every Friday. People came, watched a TED talk. We circled around, had a conversation, and went away to the weekend. Yeah. I had endless people come through the door and say, I want to give a TED talk. I have the most brilliant TED talk ever. I want to give the TED talk. And then that I want to go viral. I want to be known. I want to be successful. This is my opportunity to be the made speaker, to get the invitation, to be known. Now, all of that happens with TED Talks. And part of what you're doing is you're not only doing the talk, but you're recording this with three cameras. And your goal is to have Big Ted put all of these Asheville talks on the TED platform so the whole world sees them. And yet that motivation, I've got to go viral. I want to be famous. It's a bit of a weak motivation, I think. So how do you work with people to get them into the real reason why they want to speak and say what they need to say?
Well, I think that changes sometimes from the orientation day. And I think it doesn't change, but I think they get clearer and clearer the more that we go spelunking into their idea. I think one of the things that I have seen over and over to happen is they come in with this idea, I would call it even an assumption of an idea, or they're sort of feeling around in the dark around it. And then through the process of being challenged, inquiry, having, you know, me and another speaking coach, Jack, again, like, what are you saying here? This is confusing. Can you get more specific? All of that. It changes their talk. It changes their idea, but it also changes them. So then all of a sudden they have new insight. And so then they feed that into the talk, and then the talk talks back to them. And so there's this sort of mutual, it's actually so inspiring to watch. There's this mutual conversation that starts to happen between this idea on a document and the speaker. And, you know, I've had so many conversations where they go, oh, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Like, yeah, yes, this is what I see that you haven't seen. And I'm so glad you see it now. And then they go at it again. And I'm just going to give you a quick example. Justin Jones-Fusu, he started out with this talk, and he had these three little excerpts of stories around Viktor Frankl and Nelson Mandela. And now his talk mentions them at the end, but he starts out with this story, a personal story, that just pulls you in. And he has transformed his whole idea of, oh, I actually can tell my own story and it be credible. You don't have to tell a story about Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl is an amazing human being, offered us so much insight, but so can Justin Jones-Fusu. Another speaker was on this track trying to do something for weeks. And then I woke up one morning and I gave her a call and I said, you know, you're dealing with this particular topic idea, but have you ever thought it to be more like this idea, a little bit wider lens? And she went, That's it. That's what I've been trying to do. Nave, she completely threw away everything that she had done, probably 10 drafts of the old idea, started brand new, and in 2 weeks has created the speech that she's going to give. That's courage. That's following passion. That's following clarity. That's following the, like I said, that essential essence that they are trying to relay to an audience. She found it, and I'm so happy for her.
That's exciting. We'll be in the audience. I'm looking forward to that. Yes, you will. I would love for you now to, we're moving toward the last bit of the time we have together.
Yeah.
You're shooting this TED Talk experience. It's not just a talk. It's the full day experience. You have the cameras, and your goal is to shoot this, process the videos, submit them to TED, and then have TED say, yay, Asheville. Here we have 12 more. We'll take all you can give us.
Yeah.
You already have some proof of concept here because of some of the past TEDx speakers. Two years ago, you do this every other year. So two years ago, you had some success with this. Give us a background of the success and mention those speakers. What have they done since TEDx Asheville worked with them 2 years ago?
So many of our speakers over the last many, many years have written books, are speaking across the country, are doing remarkable work. 2024, we had two speakers. First one, David Lamont. He had been speaking a lot. That was part of his world. That was part of his life. He's also an amazing musician. But the TED Talk opened doors, kind of just opened the hatch for him. He was invited to speak in Calgary, Canada, to, I think, 15,000 people at an international Rotary event. Then he was invited to the Franklin Speaker Series. And on that speaker series, included on that speaker series, was Barack Obama, Neil Tyson Grass, the scientist, the solar system scientist, incredible. I'm sorry, I'm losing, forgetting his whole, do you know who I'm talking about?
I do know who you're talking about. Yeah. I think you got the name close.
Okay. Close
that
enough.
That happens. We're dealing with so much stuff. It's exactly. Normal to have it slip a bit. Yeah.
Yes. Amazing guy. Mike Pence, just remarkable people. David Lamont was the third on the ticket. So though he is off and running now, and this is what we hope will happen for those people who want something like that. The other speaker is Spencer Simrell and Mike Simrell. These are a white man and a black man that discovered each other really in a very strange and exciting way through ancestry process. These were two families. One was slave owners, and the other was the family of slaves. And these two families have now connected and united and are building his talk was called A Blueprint for Racial Healing. And they are the quintessential example of that. It's such an exciting story. They were picked up by Anderson Cooper with his documentary series called The Whole Story. And there is a 30-minute documentary on this program called The Whole Story that is featured. So, yeah, that it just really took off for them as well. So those are two examples. But again, we've got Tracy Green Washington has written two books. She is speaking to mostly women across the country, inspiring women. I could go on and on and on. Really exciting people doing great stuff in the world.
In the 2024 event, were you able to get all of the TED Talks on the platform? How many made it to Big TED?
You know, I haven't really checked on that. David Lamont's was targeted in their, what they call their editor's pick. So an editor's pick then is put on a newsletter and sent to millions of people across the globe. And it's, I think they have like 4, 5, 6 editor picks. And so people are more apt to then pick that up and watch it because it's recommended through TED. I haven't actually gone on to the TED site to see which ones have been brought up onto their site.
So as we move towards the end, this is all about how to get yourself involved or how to produce a TEDx talk wherever you are in the world. So for those people listening, thinking, I'd like to do what Barry's doing and there's folks in Asheville, gosh, that sounds really interesting. I don't know how to go about that. So if somebody listening would like to do a TED talk somewhere in the world, what are the requirements for that? What has to happen in order for somebody to step up and make it happen?
I think it's, first of all, it's finding the place that you want to do it. Every TED event, every TEDx event organization is completely different than the other one. I gathered actually with 100 TEDx organizers at a TED Next conference in Atlanta 2 years ago, 100 TEDxers from across the globe. Every single one of us does the event differently. So I think one of the things to find is, where would I feel, you know, where do I want to be? What stage do I want to be on? Number one. And then I would check with what their theme is and see if there is a connection. For us, that's a clear criteria. Again, other TEDxes may have a theme, but they don't really connect the speakers with the theme. But that may be something. And then, you know, if you want to be in driving distance, find some TEDxes around you. We have one in Charlotte. We have one in Greenville, South Carolina, Raleigh, Chapel Hill. You know, people here in Asheville, they could go and drive those to those places. Don't start writing your speech. You know, build the application, get clear on your idea. Again, think about, what is the action that I want my listeners to take? And what is the impact that I want my idea to have on their life, their family, their community, the world? Those two elements, I think if you can add that into your application, make sure you add those two things in. And then some TEDxes will invite people. So they curate, they will go out and look for you. They can't find you if you don't connect with them. So find an opportunity to link message them or to show up at their event, a salon or something. Make yourself known in a community if that TEDx is more of the, we're going to reach out to speakers that we want. Let yourself be known in that community.
And if I'm living in a town and I think, gee, I think I will produce a TEDx event. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make it happen. Are there licensing requirements? What do you have to do to get Big TED to give you a green light?
Yeah, there's an application on their website. You fill that out. Have some sense about what it is you want to do, where you're going to do it, what the date is, and what you're shooting to create. What is the kind of the undercurrent purpose of what your organization about? And be prepared. So before I say that, they will then, if they approve you, they will provide you with an amazing amount of resources to help you organize an event, but be prepared for a lot of work. It really is a lot of work. If you are trying to curate an experience for your audience that is positive, inspiring, connecting, you want to create a good experience for your audience so that they continue to want to come back year after year.
And nobody gets paid to do this work except the tech people you have to rent the hall. So there are expenses involved, but the people who are doing the work like you, like I'm doing the work. And since we're doing it right now, having this interview.
Exactly. Yes.
Nobody gets any money, and TED does not provide you any cash to do this.
Correct.
Where does the money come from? Do the little birds fly in and drop it from the sky, or what?
Community. We have sponsors. Again, we have a lot of local businesses. Again, we went through Hurricane Helene, but still people stepped up. Again, services. We found Kudzu Brands is our marketing person. So they're a sponsor, but they're providing a service that we need. Everyday Gourmet, Legally Addictive, is our lunch. They're providing a product. They're a sponsor. So we've had a lot of those that kind of lower our expense, our budget, so that we don't have to put out as much money. We're getting those services, they're sponsors. And it's a beautiful, it is truly the perfect partnership and exchange of their services to support what we're doing. And they're part of a community. And they also know, oh, another thing that they're getting this year is all of our top tier sponsors, their logo is going on all 12 of our videos. This is the first year that we've done that. First screen that comes up, the logos of these businesses will be seen by, again, people all over the globe.
So in a sense, everybody who shows up, buys a ticket, they're a sponsor.
Exactly.
All the in-kind work, the work that I've done with you, reviewing, talking to people, helping Allegra with her talk, helping Jennifer Pickering with her talk, coming to the rehearsals and helping people, all donated time, all in-kind time. And yet the payout, what you get for it, I don't know how you could measure it with, you don't measure it with money. You measure it with the sense of meaning, worth, self-worth, general worth of the community. It's really quite a payout. It's a good investment because it comes back very fast. You have to wait for it to accrue.
Exactly. Yes. You know, and every year I do this, my understanding and my appreciation for TED just grows deeper and deeper. I just actually this year heard an interview with the founder of TED. His name is Richard Warmer. He is a brilliant, curmudgeonly Jewish architect. And this man truly had an insatiable hunger for learning. He's an architect, but in college, he asked the dean if he could take like all kinds of, you know, art, music. He wanted to take all other classes. He loves that cross-pollination of subject areas. And so I understand the seeds of TED more than I have ever known. And that's a lot of it. It's let's break out of our, you know, our little community of, you know, therapist or coaches or scientist, we're gonna break that up, and we're gonna all show up in the same room and see where we align, where we can inspire each other, where there's connections. He's an incredible person. I encourage listeners to listen to that interview. He's a fascinating human being. Again, quite curmudgeonly, but he made it an incredible organization, and he didn't even know he was doing it.
Well, Barry, that's an incredible note to close on. You mentioned seeds. You certainly have created rich ground to sow seeds in. You've been working on this for a while. And I now believe the garden is waiting for more seeds, and it's growing on its own, and it's grateful to get the seeds when they come in. So I really do appreciate this. Last thing before you go, tell people where to go to learn more about TEDx Asheville, and then we can close.
So TEDx Asheville, the whole allletters.com is our website. And you can go link to the ticket purchase on there as well. You can see former speakers' videos are on there. We haven't loaded all of the last 17 years. We're working on building that library. So go there. There's also a place to donate. And there's a place if you want to get involved in our organization. And then if you want to find me, you can find me at Stand and Deliver Asheville. Yes, I know it's a lot of letters. StandAndDeliverAsheville.com. Reach out to me, Barry@StandAndDeliver.com. Love to hear from folks.
Very good. Well, it's easy to say StandAndDeliver.com. Or Stand and Deliver Asheville.
Asheville, correct.
Stand and Deliver. So Stand and Deliver Asheville.
Yes.
Asheville, Stand and Deliver, but you're also going to be standing and delivering Asheville and the vibe of Asheville on the TEDx stage. That's coming up on March the 20th. It's Friday. Yes. It's an all-day event, and I'm going to be there, and so will you. So, Barry, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Nave. This is a delight. I love doing this with you.
And there you go, my friends. That was Barry Barton, director of TEDx Asheville. I'm excited to see what is going to happen on the stage. Today, I'm here at Lake Eden, and I've been working with two of the TEDx speakers, Jennifer Pickering and Allegra Houston. We rehearsed all afternoon. So both Jennifer and Allegra have moved their talks along, so they're now able to speak it like it was a conversation, able to include the whole audience. So I'm very excited about seeing where they go in the next few days as we head toward the TEDx Asheville talk. And on that note, I would like to close the show by saying thank you for listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. Walter Parks, thank you for the theme song, walterparks.com, for more on Walter's music. As usual, my email is nave@jamesnave.com. Thank you to Veen Dial for managing WPVM-FM in Asheville, and Mike Tilley, Robin Collier, for managing KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio, in Taos. If you are ever interested in joining my writing group, which I co-direct, co-host with Allegra Houston, my creative collaborator, we're always there every Saturday between 12 and 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a really great gathering of writers. You can always go to my website, jamesnave.com, and there you'll find the link. It's a community gathering. It's always free. We would love to have you join us. So with that, I believe it brings us around to the end of our time together. Once again, thanks for listening. I do hope you come back again sometime soon. And until then, maybe I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
You're listening to WPVM 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And we have exciting news to share. We're officially expanding our identity to Radio Asheville, a name that truly captures who we've become over this decade. While we'll always be WPVM 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina for our legal ID, you'll now hear us as Radio Asheville throughout our programming. This rebranding celebrates not just our 10th anniversary under new management, but our deep connection to this amazing city we call home. Since 2015, we have transformed WPVM from a struggling station with few volunteers to a well-rounded station with unique and compelling programming, unlike any other in the region. Now, we'll be honest. We're a volunteer-run organization. So occasionally, you might hear a technical glitch. Perhaps we're broadcasting in mono instead of stereo, or a file has gotten stuck on repeat until someone catches it. When this happens, bear with us. We will always get it sorted out. And thank you to listeners who call in or message us when something's not quite right. Your vigilance helps us stay on track. This brings us to something special, our 10th anniversary fundraiser, celebrating both our evolution and the wonderful volunteer community that creates great programming for Asheville. If you can, please consider making a tax-deductible donation at WPVMFM.org. Click on the donate option when you get to the side, or send a donation to WPVM at 34 Wall Street, Suite 407, Asheville, North Carolina, 28801. Whether you contribute financially or simply by listening, you're part of this community we've built together. So welcome to Radio Asheville, where committed volunteers create real programming for real people. Something that you cannot get from algorithm-dominated digital content.
I'll always be true. My devotion will ever be yours, my darling, eternally true to you. No other lips will ever appeal to me, true to you. I'll always be by your side, finding all my joy and bliss in the sweetness of your kiss, pledging love and tenderness true to you.